The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today. Welcome to episode number 16 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name's Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
So our friends over at Magic the Amateuring started off their latest episode with a big sigh. I think it's only fitting that we start ours with a girl.
Yep.
Girl.
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 You a lot of girls.
But it's appropriate though. Like it's kind of like the word dude. We're like, you know, you can greet somebody with it. You can be like, girl, and you can say goodbye to somebody with it. You can be like, girl. Or you can just, you know, you can be disappointed with somebody. You can be like, girl. You know, or you can be really excited. Like let's say you win your winning in and you're like, girl, girl. You can be, it's just, it really does everything.
Multi-purpose word. It's like aloha.
It slices, it dices, it purees.
I use the disappointed one with my boss a lot.
Do you?
I do. I go in and I'm like, girl, what are you thinking with this schedule?
See, you're doing it wrong because girl can be the disappointment. Like, you can be like, girl. Like, it's just, you don't even have to say what were you thinking. You can just say it in such a way where it does it for you.
Girl.
All right, so enough with
go
the girls.
For it, Katie.
All right, let's go ahead and get started. So our shout out this week goes to Ellis Spada, who left us a lovely 5-star review on iTunes. He says, putting their podcast where their mouths are by giving women more representation. They give educated opinions and views week after week from a woman's view and the view of people who want to make magic a better place. Thank you very much for that, Espada. Our nominee for Women of Excellence this week is Anastasia Thompson, who is a level 3 judge from South Africa. Anastasia wrote an eloquent and thoughtful rebuttal to Jim Davis's article, which we will touch on a little bit later in the show. Some of the things that Anastasia focused on include women being perceived as strong or weak based on how they deal with incidents of sexism, how body shaming is more pervasive when it happens to women, and much, much more. If you'd like to read her post in its entirety, you can head on over to planeswalkersfordiversity.wordpress.com, or you can follow Anastasia on Twitter at Anaphylaxus, that is Anaphylaxus. I've heard she might be a doctor.
That sounds correct.
So if she is, that is even more awesome for doing the damn thing in that field. There were 3 major magic events that took place this past weekend, SCG Indianapolis, GP Providence, and GP Copenhagen. The first 2 were standard. Copenhagen was modern. Let's start off by talking about Indianapolis. I see a lot of green-red devotion and green-red dragons when I look at the top 32.
Yeah, the format's gotten way mid-rangier in the last couple weeks.
Okay, what do you think brought this on?
To deal with Abzan.
You mean like Abzan control or the aggro version?
The aggro version, because Abzan has a harder time with green-red, from what I can recall.
Yeah, I haven't played standard in a while, so I was, the last time I sort of dipped my toe into the format, Esper control was all the rage, and just as quickly fell off the map, and here we are with this.
I think green-red is really good against Esper, because every threat has to be answered, and so it doesn't really, I don't know, it feels like you don't have to get ahead of Esper as much as in other decks where you have to have a board presence, but you can just play like one Polukranos and they better be answering it or they're on a 4-turn clock. But every card in their deck is really good. Whisperwood Elemental, Hornet Queen, Death Mist Raptor, Genesis Hydra, they're all just really good value cards against the Esper deck.
Yeah, I'm taking a look at Eric Rohl's Green Red Dragons deck right now. This was the deck that won the Star City Games Standard Open in Indianapolis. And so many of the threats, like Ashcloud Phoenix, Deathmist Raptor, Den Protector, even like Stormbirth Dragon and Thunderbreak Regent, like these are cards that have an immediate impact on the board and need to be answered, and sometimes require multiple answers to get them out of the way. So it seems like a really resilient deck, really good in a meta that is dominated by control, but I'll be curious to see how it holds up against, you know, other mid-range decks, since that seems to be where we're going.
Yeah, it does feel like we've gone back in time a little bit, where the Abzan control decks are starting to play Wingmate Rock again. I think Chris and I were watching some coverage the other day, and we felt like we were back to when Cons first came out, where we're using Genesis Hydra again and Wingmate Rock, and all those cards that had sort of phased out are now coming back.
Yeah.
What do you think is the difference between Green Red Devotion and Green Red Dragons? Like, which one do you think is better?
The Devotion seems to be making a little bit of a stronger showing from what I can see. I'd have to look at individual lists to see for sure, but if I was going to play it, I think I would probably go the Devotion route.
Yeah, I think Hornet Queen seems really good in a metagame where people are just trying to power out huge dragons and try to win with like one big threat like that. I think Hornet Queen is a pretty good way to shore up against that.
At the beginning of this meta, I had been testing out Jund and different variants of that. And with Stormbreath Dragon and Thunderbreak Regent, and I'm seeing Eric Rohl is also playing two Ashcloud Phoenix, sometimes your hand can just feel really clunky. Like, you can't do a whole ton in one turn all the time, and your mana is not always used very efficiently. And I feel like maybe that's an advantage that Green Red Devotion has over dragons, is that not everything is like a four drop.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you guys interested in Standard right now? Like, what would you play if you were going to a Standard event this weekend?
I'm not sure. I'm actually not going to be playing in a major Standard event until after Origins comes out. I'm planning on going to GP San Diego. So I'm kind of waiting to see what we get with Origins. I know Black got a new sweeper, which sounds pretty appealing. So for now, like, Green Red Devotion seems pretty good. It's kind of hard to argue with. But otherwise, like, pretty much any deck with the Deathmist Raptor, Den Protector engine is really appealing to me. Just lots of value.
I couldn't sleep the other night, so I was trying to work through what I would play for Standard, as I haven't really focused on it. And I'm trying to put together a Grixis Dragons deck, or possibly something using the various like Nagas from Cons. I really want to do something with like Profaner of the Dead and try to do a combo thing with that, so I'm trying to brew with Christopher Preston to see if he can help me with either of those things.
My boyfriend actually built a Grixis Dragons deck, so I can send you some of his ideas if you want.
That would be awesome.
Have you seen the green-black dragons list that's floating around where it's got a green-black shell to it, and then there's like an Atarka, a Dramoka, a Silumgar, and like all the dragons?
Yeah, I was watching that on coverage. That was what Kent Ketter was playing in Indy, right?
Yeah.
That deck is really cool.
The green-black dragons moniker is super misleading, because I was like, green-black? Like, what green-black dragons are you playing? And I was like, oh, all of them.
Yeah, he was playing that, and I kind of had the same reaction. Like, I went into it very shady. Like, I was just like, what do they think? What is this bullshit? And then, like, who do you think? And I look at it, and I was just about to make the tweet. I was just about to put out a snarky tweet and be like, does someone want to tell me why this is green, black dragons? Cause, and then I'm like, oh, Thoughtseize, Murderous Cut, Heroes, okay, delete. And then I understood. But just from looking at the creatures, I was like, you know, what are they doing?
Yeah, I saw Green Black Dragons, and I was like, what, is he playing Deathbringer Regent or something? Like, what's going on here?
I didn't have time to watch any of the Star City coverage. How did his mana base work out? Like, was he able to cast everything?
Yeah, Haven of the Spirit Dragon works wonders, apparently.
Yeah, I'm looking at the list right now. He has 25 land, 2 forest, 1 plains, 4 haven, 4 Lanawar waste, 4 opulent palace, a sandstep citadel, 1 temple of deceit, 4 temple of malady, 3 windswept heath, and an urborg.
Yeah, I actually watched a match where he was playing against someone who was playing the 4-color collected company deck, and Kent's mana base just seemed to be working out a lot better than the other guys.
Interesting.
Yeah, I can see this being one of those decks where, like, God bless Kent Ketter if he can get it to work, but I have a feeling that if I were to take this to an open, I would not be that fortunate. Like, I would be the one that couldn't get the mana to work, and it would just fall apart in my hands.
Should note, you also have 4 Sylvan Caryatids and 4 Satyr Wayfinders, so that helps quite a bit.
There was one list in the top 32 that I was interested in. It came in 19th place, Taylor Wright, Green Black Company. And I don't really like Collected Company, but I do like a lot of the cards that he was playing with. 4 Bloodsoaked Champion. 3 Merciless Executioner. Of course, he has the Death Mist, Den Protector package. 2 Master of the Feast, because Collected Company into that's got to be fun. Night Howler, 2 Tassigar, 3 Farika, 2 Whip of Erebos. This is my jam.
That looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, this is more up my alley. So that's probably what I would play if I were to get in the standard. And we should start thinking about standard because we have SCG Chicago in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm trying to figure it out so I'm not going in blind being like, I'm not going to whip it up the night before because that would be very bad.
Now, you've been watching the Japanese streams from Happy MTG quite a bit, haven't you?
Yes, just about every night I put it on and I fall asleep watching it, wake up in the middle of the night, I'm like, oh, next round starting. That's cool. And I'll go back to bed or something. But that's kind of what made me think about Grixis Dragons, because I think there was a guy that was kind of leaning toward that. I'm like, yes, I like this. This is cool. Because they do a lot of different streams for all the different formats, and they do something like a tournament called like Modern Gods or something, and it's like this big huge tournament where they crown like a modern god and then they have them all compete against each other, I think, later, and it looks really awesome.
Now, if you don't mind me asking, because it is a Japanese stream, do they have English commentary, or do they have subtitles, or do they...
No, they just have a feature match area where they have the 2 players sit down. You really can't hear too much. They don't really talk very much with each other. If they do, it's in Japanese and I can't understand it. But it's a very quiet stream. You're just kind of watching them play. And it's just really interesting just to kind of sit and watch all the different people that come by and sit down and play and their different play mats and how they shuffle and just like... the different decks that they're playing. Like for a while I saw was Abzan and like red, and now it's still Abzan, but you know, that Grixis Dragons deck that I saw, and then for modern, I'm trying to remember what kind of modern decks they had, but it's just really interesting to be able to see it. I wish that they would show the rest of the store so you could kind of get a feel for how big the place actually is and some of the other things that they do there. And I actually placed an order from them last week because I really wanted to get some of their sleeves and a life counter pad from them because I thought that would be really cool. But definitely check it out. It's on really late because obviously they're many hours a day, whatever, ahead of us. But it really is cool to watch to see what they do. I've actually picked up some of the habits to confirm how many cards you have. When you dole out your 7 cards, it's like, okay, I have 7. I'm showing you I have 7. I'm confirming it. And they do something also where they confirm their sideboard to show that they, I think, have 15 cards in their sideboard. So it's pretty cool. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I go to Happy MTG regularly just for their deck list, you know, just to see what they do. Because, you know, we've praised the, you know, the Asian players and the technology that they use and how a lot of times it feels very next level compared to what we're doing here. And specifically the modern portion, like I love just going through and seeing, you know, the sideboard tech that they use and just some of the lists that they play. I remember there was a mono black list the other day that was like Giraffe's Messenger, Mortar Pod, Phyrexian Obliterator. And I was just like, love this. And just, you know, I just love it. And just stuff that we're not really doing here. It's fantastic.
Yeah, they had 2 deck lists. I still have to keep checking them out. But one was for a modern land destruction deck, and it was a modern blue-white clock permission deck.
Like with Grind Clock?
Let me pull up the list. Let's see. It's got Geist, Kitchen Finks, Restoration Angel, Snapcaster, Click.
Like the sound of it so far.
Yeah. I was like, this is so cool. Cryptic Command, Dismembers, Mana Leaks, Path, Spell Snare. Let's see what's in the sideboard. Stony Silence, Batterskull. All things I like. Spell Pierce, Negate, Disenchant, Aven Mind Sensor. So it's got some cool stuff, and I like the idea of it. And since I have most of the cards, I'd probably pick up the ones I didn't have and maybe throw it together. And it's got a, what is it? Iganjo Castle. And that's cool. So I like that. So I'm like, I would like to check this out some more.
I'm just curious. You said it was called Clock Control, though. I was just curious where the clock part came in.
I have no idea. I don't know if something got lost in translation there. I'm not sure. But that's the English translation that I'm finding. Because they'll post the list in, you know, Japanese and English. But I'm not seeing anything else on there to say why. So, but I thought the name was cool. And it plays a lot of cards that I like. So I'm like, well, I'll check that out. And the land destruction one, not a lot of people really run a lot of land destruction decks by us, so I thought it might be cool to maybe play something like that and see where it goes.
Sure. So the next event was GP Providence. The winner was a friendly-looking ginger named Sky Mason. I believe Sky Mason is a level 2 judge.
He is. Go judges!
Yay! I love seeing judges that get competitive and take a break from the job.
Yeah.
Do you know Sky, Katie?
I feel like I've seen him working at events, but I've never directly worked with him.
He seems lovely. He won with Green Red Devotion, as we were just talking about. Sidisi Whip actually cracked the top 8, which I'm a huge fan of. Again, with the Deathmist Raptor Den Protector package, of course. I'm noticing a lot more of these Megamorph decks, like Bant Megamorph made top 8, and Abzan Megamorph has been a thing for a while. I have to say, I've never been a fan of Deathmist Raptor. It hasn't quite caught on with me the way that it has with everybody else. And our friend Jadine Klumperens, who we love, has been talking about this quite a bit over at TCG Player, why she doesn't think it's that swell. Do you all agree with this? Like, do you think that Deathmist and Den Protector is too good, or can you see where she's coming from?
I can kind of see where she's coming from. Like, I think one of the major points she's made is that Deathmist Raptor is really good on curve, but kind of struggles in the later game. And especially if we're seeing a bunch of these decks that are trying to go big with dragons, whether it's like the 5-color deck or the like Mardu dragons or any of those. Deathmist Raptor, just sort of like bringing it back as a surprise blocker, doesn't seem all that effective.
Yeah, they're able to go over your head.
And even if, I don't know, I feel like Deathmist Raptor is real good. Like, even if he doesn't come back or do much else, like, still a 3-3 with Death Touch in this kind of format can be really powerful.
Yeah, mostly I just don't want to shell out for the Deathmist Raptors.
Me either.
Yeah, so, you know, I haven't really gotten the chance to play with them. Like, I think the last event we went to, Dragons had just come out, so I think we really weren't seeing their impact. And then I haven't been playing Standard this whole time, so for me to have to pick them up, it just seems like if I can save some money and not pick them up, I'd like to get away with it if I can. But now that they're creeping into the Sidisi decks, it's like, oh, man. Last but not least was GP Copenhagen. 1,300 people turned out for that, slightly more than turned out for Providence. A blue-white merfolk won this event. Interesting things to note about this particular list, there were 2 main deck Relic of Progenitus and no actual white cards in it, except for 1 land that can make white or blue mana. There were 3 copies of that. But there was another blue-white merfolk deck that also made top 8 that did have things like Kataki, Path to Exile, and things like that, which made a bit more sense. Scapeshift made top 8, which, hey girl, we haven't seen that in a minute. Misty Scapeshift. Rest of the top 8 was Grixis Control, Grixis Delver, Grixis Twin. Notice the pattern. Jund and Mono White Death and Taxes.
It's pretty diverse as far as I can see. Definitely wasn't expecting to see two copies of Merfolk.
Blue-white Merfolk at that.
Yeah.
Has rest in peace in the sideboard.
I'm surprised Mono White made top 8. Usually that deck doesn't really, like, sneak through.
I can kind of see it. You know, Chris mentioned rest in peace, you know, and there have been decks that have been sneaking through. Nobody's really packing Graveyard Hate right now. So, you know, I know that Graveyard Hate can stifle Delver decks quite a bit. I was using Leyline of the Void to great effect this past weekend. And, you know, you have these Through the Breach decks and these Goryeo's Vengeance decks, and that can kind of slow them down too. So, and, you know, you have the decks that can't search for land. You know, they can't search their libraries, which stifles Tron and Amulet of Vigor. You know, I can kind of see it with the way the format's going right now. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I was actually taking a look at the Grixis Delver deck because, you know, this is my deck of choice. I like to be up on the new tech coming out. And one thing I loved about this deck was that it was playing 3 main deck Terminates. I thought that was pretty awesome. I think Terminate is well positioned right now, and I was sort of lamenting the lack of Terminates in my deck when I was playing against Tarmo Twin. So that might be something I consider the next time I go back and try to make some tweaks.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was reading a tournament report over at the Metery today from a guy named Matt Bamonte. He won the Modern 5K in Indianapolis, and he was on Grixis Delver, and he was actually saying that he is not sure how he feels about Terminate because it's a little more difficult to cast with Snapcasters.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's something you agree with.
I agree that it's difficult to cast, but I'm just wondering if it might be a necessary evil in this meta.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because, you know, you do kind of have to worry about a little of everything now, where it's like you're having to, you have to worry about Grizzlebrand, and you have to worry about a Gourmag Angler, and Tassigar, and...
And Primeval Titan.
Yeah, you know, but still be able to take out a Delver if you need to, or a Scavenging Ooze.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of Primeval Titan, I didn't see any Bloom Titan in this top 8, and I was kind of surprised.
Thank God. I don't think it did well at our PPTQ either, did it, Chris?
No, I don't think so. I think that there was maybe one or two people playing it, but I do not believe that it made the top 8 at all.
There was another list I was interested to see in the top 16. Have you all had any experience against the Suicide Zoo list?
No, I hadn't seen that before.
Okay, do you mind if I tell you about it?
I saw it has Death Shadow. That looks pretty awesome.
So I actually got a chance to face it the other day. I knew that Frank Karsten had written about it, but I admit I didn't read the article. Like, I saw the headline and I'm like, well, that's nice. That doesn't really affect me. This is another time where Aaron gets paired up against the weird shit. So I'm in the queue. I'm in the queues on Magic Online, and I see what appears to be a normal zoo list. Like, it has, like, he started off with like turn 1 Monastery Swift Spear, and I'm like, all right, you know, whatever. And then he plays a turn 2 the Step Lion that has the Landfall.
Yeah, Step Links.
Right. So I'm like, all right, girl, you're doing thing. So he decides to swing with the Monastery Swift Spear, and then all of a sudden he plays Teemer Battle Rage. And I'm like, what? Like, what? All right. But then he goes mutagenic growth. And I'm like, what is going? You just took 4. All right. So he's hurting himself a lot. Like, I notice he's playing all these like Phyrexian spells. Like, he's playing Gataxian Probe. There was a gut shot in there, and he's just dinging away. And I remember thinking, you keep this up, I won't even have to kill you. You'll do it to yourself. Then all of a sudden he plays Death Shadow. And I'm like, oh, this is why you're hurting yourself. Okay. And then all of a sudden he slaps a Teemer Battle Rage on the Death Shadow. And I'm like, I'm not having fun anymore. Like, and that's the point of the deck. The whole point is just to spend much of it going, you know, ow, 2 damage, ow, 1 damage, ow, 2 damage. And then you play a really big Death Shadow and then find a way to pump it up even bigger, become immense is in the main deck. It's just ludicrous. That's a fun little deck for people who are looking for a little spice in their life. Some of us got the chance to actually play Magic this weekend. Katie, we're going to let you go first. You had your judge conference, and I understand that you did reasonably well at your event. What did you do?
Yeah, so I had a modern pre-TQ on Saturday, and then the judge conference was on Sunday. Saturday, we had 29 people, and I think probably 75% of them were judges. So every time you played against somebody, there was actually a lot of judge calls, and everybody was kind of joking about how people should know the rules, but... In the top eight, there was 9 levels of judges, and we were trying to guess before going into top eight how many there would be, and I got it right. Boom. Mm. Level 2 actually won it. His name is Ryan LeCount, and he was playing Coco. I lost to him in round 2. Round 1, I had a bye. I played him in round 2, and I don't have a ton of experience against about I don't have a ton of experience playing against that deck, but he had some really good draws. He played like 3 collected companies after mulling to 5 in game 1, and then I tried to go for a kill spell, and he just corded and killed me. Well, not killed me, but gained infinite life, so I could not win. And then game 2 in that round went a little bit better for me, but I just couldn't handle the recursion of creatures with all the eternal witnesses and getting back collected companies and whatnot. And then in round 3, I played against a Naya aggro deck, which is kind of the deck I just want to see, and I beat him. In round 4, I played against a Grixis control deck, which should be really good for my 4-color list. I punted one of the games, which I was a little upset about. Because I forgot that he had a creeping tar pit that had done nothing all game, and then I died to it. And then in round 5, I was 2-2 going in, but since there weren't a ton of people, we were... there was too many 9-point players for them to all draw, so they all had to play. And I was at top of the 6s. My tiebreakers were like at 70% or something. And then the people that were sitting next to me on the left were the 2 bottom 9 pointers. And they waited until they had played their match. One of the kids had won 2-0. And then they waited until the other people reported to report their match. And since everybody, the other 9s had all played, they could draw in. And since they were friends, that's what they did. And that knocked me out of top 8, which was unfortunate. So aww. I got solid 9th place. but it was a lot of fun. I was really proud of my sideboard because I felt like I predicted the meta almost perfectly. Like, I don't have a ton of tournaments where I get use out of every single card in my sideboard, or, you know, at the end of the day you think, oh, well, this should have been something else to help fight this. But I felt like my expectations were pretty spot on, so that was a good feeling. And then on Sunday was the judge conference. There was about 50 to 60 judges.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quite a large gathering. It was put on by Noel Clausen, who's the L2 from Wyoming. We got a new L2 here in Montana, so shout out to Killian Kirkpatrick for passing his L2. We're all very excited that we get to do less things.
That's a cool name. You said Killian Kirkpatrick?
Yeah, he has a t-shirt that says Killian, so it's like advertising a bar or something, and he wears it so that people can remember his name.
It's a very Irish name, isn't it?
Yes.
Is he very Irish?
He can drink like an Irishman. He's not ginger.
Oh, I was hoping he'd like come up to your table like, I'm Killian Kirkpatrick. And I'm like, oh, that's wonderful. Just stay here and narrate.
No accent that I've heard so far, but maybe one day he'll break it out. So at the conference, they did a really cool thing. So they had 2 rooms that were right next to each other, separated by this kind of divider wall that had a door in it. And you could go to one of 2 talks on either side of the divider. So they had a lot of options, and I think they had 5 time slots. So there was 10 different talks that you could go see that were all put on by different levels of judges and whatnot. So I went to a talk on judging as customer service, how to make your community feel like you're doing them a service, how to be polite, things, extra things you can be doing at events to make everybody have a really great time. There was a talk on growing your community, whether you're a judge or not, whether you're an L1 or an L5, things that you can be doing in the community to help encourage others to become judges or create a welcoming environment. I went to a talk on giving feedback, which I think is really important, whether you're a player or a judge. You can go in and write reviews about judges, even as a player, giving them great reviews or some constructive criticism for them to improve on. And I went to a talk on game rule violations and backups, which was kind of just a bunch of different examples on would you rewind this game, would you not rewind this game, because it can kind of be a... It's a good tool, but it can also be overused, I think, in some situations where, depending on how many decisions were made in the time where you want to back up, whether or not you should back up that board state. So all the talks were really good. I gave my little 5-minute thing on unsportsmanlike conduct, minor, major, and aggression. We played The Price is Right, but with judging stuff. So we're all sitting in this room. They've got a laptop that's playing like the game show music. We're all like cheering and hollering and yelling at people like, no, don't pick that one. Pick the Mox Pearl. all sorts of craziness. And it was a lot of fun. Channel Fireball and Star City both donated a lot of prizes, as well as our regional coordinator. So like everybody, when you went in the room, got a random magic card. I think they were from Mirrodin, some old set. And they had a deck that was identical to every card that they just handed out. So they pulled random people and you got to go up. And then they had like, how many judges were judging over Modern Masters Grand Prix Vegas weekend, but in the whole world, and you had to guess the number, and then whoever got closest without going over got to go up and play a different game. It was a lot of fun. Everybody was, I was pumped up. I was like yelling, and everybody's very excited.
That's cool. That's cool. So I have to ask though, you have this knack for like taking very intriguing pictures where like there's it feels like there's a story behind every one. So there's a picture that went around of you giving this very ominous glare, like looking very serious. Like what was going on in that board state where you were focused, Katie?
So after I saw the picture, because I asked Brooke to take a few because I wanted to get MTG Focus's playmat that they just sent me in there. And I also wanted to just have a few pictures of myself playing the game. And I didn't realize that I always look so scary. So he had a... it was against the Grixis control player that I ended up losing to in the third game. And he had... let's see. I was cryptic commanding a spell. And then he was trying to flash in to Fury. And then I was trying to negate a different spell, and then he was trying to remand his own Teferi, and I was trying to get a like read on him, because I felt like he was pretty, I don't want to say like too open book, but I felt like I kind of knew when he was like running out of counter spells and whatnot, so I was just staring at him, but I didn't realize my stare looked so death glare-ish.
I love it, and the scarf, that scarf was massive, I was living for it.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the $10 scarves in Vegas on one of those little random kiosks in the middle of hotels when you're walking through them. Everything was $10, and I was like, I'll get this and this and this scarf and this scarf, and went away with full arms.
Very cool. Yeah, you know, I try wearing scarves, and it just never looks good on me. I wore one of the Community Cup, and it just didn't sell.
Aw.
Yeah,
girl.
It's okay. I know. Just some trends just don't work. It's just how it is, you know.
They're so warm and nice, especially when I live in the frozen tundra that is Montana.
Please, we live in Wisconsin. You want to play the frozen tundra game?
Should we play it this winter?
I am totally down. Chris?
I'm fine with it. Although, I think that Katie will be traveling by husky sled and we may not. I'm not sure.
Katie the Heat Neal, burn-a, like on her judge thing with her judge shirt on, her scarf blowing, fierce.
Rawr.
So Chris and I went to a PPTQ this past weekend in her neck of the woods. Chris, how'd you do?
Well, I have maintained my warm spot in the back, hanging out with all the cool kids. Had a good time, though. I piloted my blue-white control deck that I've been working on for the past couple of months. Of course, round one, I'd play my friend, Chris McHenry, and he was playing this really awesome Esper Mentor deck, which is really cool and a pain in my butt to try to deal with. I got swept, but we had a good game, and, you know, after we were done, he was like, hey, you know, do you want me, you know, to give you some criticism? And, like, he helped me, which was really cool. And after that, I played our friend Steve. He was doing Affinity. I got swept by him, but admittedly, I couldn't help myself. I was too busy watching Aaron play Chris because I was like, I need to see what happens in their game, trying to focus on my Affinity game. I'm like, what are you doing? Everything's on the line. And I ended up losing anyway. But after that, I got to play Merfolk. And I had actually never played against Merfolk before. And so it was a good learning experience to kind of see what their deck's all about and everything. And Spreading Seas, like, just really fucked up my shit. I could not Supreme Verdict to save my life. So too bad for me. But it was really cool. And I was happy to see that one of the sideboard cards from GP Copenhagen that was in the blue-white Merfolk deck, Brittany had it in her sideboard, I believe, and it's called Unified Will. And she was like, I love this card. It's so dope. And I'm like, yeah, it's really cool. Then I played someone playing Junk, and I got swept. After that, I dropped just because I wanted to kind of observe everyone else playing Magic. I wanted to find out what the heck happened to my package from Japan and just kind of chill out and not focus on playing anymore. I think too much I've been focusing on winning and beating myself up about it and be like, why am I not getting better? And I think from now on, I just want to shift my focus to playing different decks, getting a feel for more things, especially in Modern, before I really commit to being like, this is going to be my Modern deck. This is what I'm going to consistently pilot and get better with and kind of go from there. I really still need to get a lay of the land of some decks I've never really encountered before. So I was happy to play the Merfolk player because I'd never had to do it before. It was a good time, and then we had pie afterwards, and that made everything better.
Pie is pretty good.
Yeah, I'd never been to Baker Square before. Apparently that's like a ritual for them. She forgot to tell me, though, that it was in a different state. So she was like, hey, girl, you want to go to Baker Square? And I'm thinking it's just a couple blocks down or something like that. All of a sudden, we're crossing like a state line, and I'm like, are we in Illinois? Like, what's going on? Oh, yeah, it's in Gurnee. And I'm like, what?
It was worth the drive, though.
It was.
It was so good.
So we went to this PPTQ, and our friend Morgan Jansen was there, who we love. Friend of the show. If you're not following her, at Loki Morgan. She's a great person. Truly a beautiful person. Great mom. She was there with her little boy. And she went 5-0 going into round 6 with Affinity.
Go, Morgan. Yeah.
Do the damn thing. And she was so nervous. She's like, oh, you know, she constantly underestimates herself, and she's really good. Like, I really want her to just kind of own her confidence. So she was able to draw into the top 8. She made it to top 4 before she lost to a Zoo burn list. Like, she indicated it was something she'd never seen before. So I don't think it was like a normal one of those lists, but she ended up doing fantastic, and we love her. And I was playing Lone Pox, which Raph Levy took to GP Copenhagen and came in 39. I want to say with it. I was very happy with him. And I kind of wanted to play this deck because I feel like playing Legacy Dredge taught me how to just dredge better. Like, I realized that I was playing Lone Pox all wrong, and I wanted to tackle it. And I also saw that he was playing with a different version, so I wanted to see how that was going to go. I started off strong. I was 2-1, and then I was 3-1. And I beat Splinter Twin, Esper Mentor, and some 5-color control list. It didn't really do anything. No offense, Katie. And then I lost to Affinity, so I was 3-1. And there were 2 more rounds to go. And then I got paired up against the 2 decks I just did not want to face. I got paired up against Fopod, which I did take Fopod to game 3. And the only reason he won is because he sideboarded in a single copy of Blood Baron. which I had no way of dealing with. So he was able to get through my blockers, and we were both kind of hanging around 10 life. And then that neat little clause where Blood Baron gets really fuck off big happened. And if he did not have the Blood Baron, I had enough blood gas on the board and enough spirits on the board where I could have beat him. And then the last round of the day was, of course, Tron. And even after landing a turn two smallpox in each game, he still was able to assemble Tron flawlessly, and then I just wasn't really playing at that point anymore. So I finished 3-3, maintaining my title of break-even girl, as I lovingly like to call myself. And Hallie, you actually told me that it might be a little better that I started off strong and then kind of nosedived, as opposed to being 0-3 and then winning the next three, right?
Yeah, it helps your tiebreakers, and you're definitely playing against better players at that point. Like, it's definitely more challenging to play those last couple rounds with a good record. That's something that I've struggled with too. I've had a couple tournaments where, like, I've gone 4-3 or something after starting out 4-1, and it can be frustrating, but I just keep trying to tell myself that, like, I need to work on my stamina, and it's not such a bad thing to, you know, lose out in the last couple rounds, as opposed to, like, losing the first couple rounds. Like, the last couple rounds are harder, and it takes more practice and more effort to get through them.
Yeah, but I had a good time. I feel like the deck is real. I felt very confident against any blue decks. Sorry, girls. like I said, the only decks I really wasn't prepared for was Tron and Faux Pod. And I think, you know, that can come with experience. Like, I don't think it was a flaw with the deck necessarily. I think it was just more my own inexperience. And I'm looking forward to making some of the changes that Raph made. Like, he added a main deck conflagrate, and he made some sideboard changes. So I'm probably going to play it at FNM this week, maybe play in a modern PPTQ, maybe try out for the modern festival, and just keep playing the deck.
Sweet.
You were so funny. You were like, give me a blue player. Just give me a blue player. I just need to get this done. Just let me face blue. And it was just so funny. That's why I was really hoping that you would do it, because I'd be like, that'd be so cool. And I was happy that Morgan, she took third. And, you know, really, that's amazing, considering she came in and was like, I didn't really get a lot of practice in and all this whatever. You took third place, girl. And that's amazing.
Yeah, very proud of her. So, we're here. We have to do it. All right. So, there was an article, which I'm sure you all may have heard about, on a tiny website called Star City Games, about a harmless topic of women in Magic. And a young man felt the need to write about it, and some stuff happened, and who wants to go first?
I want to start out by saying that I think Jim Davis was very well-intentioned. I think he's trying to work towards the same goal as everybody else, but I think it just came across worse off than he intended.
I completely agree with that.
So I commend him for his effort and for being on the bandwagon with you know, trying to get more women in Magic, I think. But yeah, it didn't come across as well as it could have.
Yeah, no. I completely agree with you, Katie. I was not aware of the article until I picked Erin up for the weekend. She's like, your boy Jim Davis. And I was like, oh no, like, what happened? And just, you know, reading it later and hearing other people's responses and just having Erin read it out loud to me, I was like, what?
It's too bad that you didn't have a webcam attached to your laptop, because we just got back from the PPTQ. We had just gotten back from Baker Square. We were in our, like, comfy clothes. We were watching Hoarders. We were just putzing around. And I started reading her excerpts from the article. And even just hearing, you know, she couldn't even keep a straight face. She was like, what is this? And I was like, we really should record this, because we were having so much fun just kind of like just reading his words and just laughing at how either, you know, misguided they were, or how poorly they just failed to land. And we came really close to making a video out of it.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And then my boyfriend's walking around the room and he's like, wait, what? And he's even just like aghast at some of the things that were written. And overall, I feel like again, Jim did not come from a place of maliciousness. I do not believe that. I don't know him as a person. I don't know what he's like as a person. Maybe he's a very lovely person to meet in person. But I think that what he said just really missed the mark. And it's really unfortunate that some of the examples that he brought up and other things that he started off strong saying just went completely into left field and ended up hurting people's feelings, whether or not he meant to. And, you know, kind of took a week that started off on like a super high note and really left it on kind of a sour one. And I just kind of wish that it had never been published, but it was here. And, you know, I think that everyone, you know, can learn from it in some way. It's just unfortunate that so many bad things ended up coming out of it. And I really hope that people that read the article don't let some of the things that he said divide them from other people in the magic community. I know that there was a lot of people that supported Jim Davis, a lot of men that did, and some women. But really, I think it should be about trying to bring each other together and bring each other up and not let varying opinions drive us further apart overall.
I completely agree with that. I, again, have nothing against Jim Davis, except maybe his taste in sports teams. I saw him on coverage wearing a Rangers jersey once, and that did not sit right with me. Other than that, I'm sure that, you know, I understand that he had good intentions. He clearly wants women to be part of the community. His girlfriend is a Magic player. He supports her. He wants women to go out in top eight tournaments. He said that at the end of his article. And I agree that, you know, if it were that easy, then that's something that we would do and that would make our community better. But his supposition that we can just go out and do that just shows a lack of understanding of the underlying issues that, you know, women can't just go out and top eight a tournament if they don't have people to play test with or if they don't have people to travel with, split the cost of a hotel room, like help shoulder that financial burden. If they don't have people supporting them in the community, they can't just go out and do the things that Jim says they can so easily do. And, you know, I've been where he is. Like, when I first started playing, I was treated very well by people in the community, and I had a difficult time seeing and recognizing the problems that women face. But through listening to other women, I came to recognize that, yes, this was a problem. And I think we can all benefit from listening to stories like the ones that Megan shared in her article, the ones that other women have shared in their articles, and just being more understanding about this issue, because it is a problem and we can only fix it by helping each other and being more empathetic, I think.
And then my argument comes, which kind of blows that all out of the water. I had to write my thoughts down because I had so many of them. So I'm going to try really hard not to sound scripted. And I apologize in advance if it sounds like I'm reading from a cue card. But yeah, I may end up being the bad guy here, and I'm okay with that. So I'm going to start things off with this. So I don't think that anybody who's ever been discriminated against, like if you belong to a group that's been discriminated against, I don't think you should be given a gold star for being nice. And what I mean by that is I loved Megan and Maria's episode about this. I loved Anastasia's take on that. But one of the things I kept hearing about it is sort of like they said on Gabby's article, thanks for being nice. Thanks for having tact. Thanks for, no. I'm of the mindset where if you're a woman, I think if you're not Caucasian, I think if you're a member of the LGBT community, you have every right to get upset when fucked up things happen to you or to people like you. I think a lot of times when people say thank you for being nice and things like that, what they're really saying is thank you for not making me uncomfortable with your opinions. And And I, like I said, I enjoyed their responses, but I wouldn't have been mad at them. Like, if Megan had really come out swinging, I wouldn't have been one bit mad at her. Like, I would have been really okay with it, and it wouldn't have made her opinion any less valid. You know, I think that we've been nice about things for a really long time, and there are just some things that I can't be nice about. And maybe that's a character flaw of mine, like, maybe that's my shortcoming, but I could not really be nice about this. This is the nicest I've been about it that tonight. I wasn't for most of the weekend. With that said, though, I think the post just didn't need to happen. Like, I think if anybody was going to disagree with Megan and was going to write a post for a major content provider about this, it should have come from another woman. I think that, you know, there are things that have happened in the news lately that I definitely have opinions on, like the protests in Baltimore, the Rachel Dolezal shit show, and like shootings in Charleston and things like that. I can give my opinions on these things, but these are discussions that don't involve me. Like, I am a white transgender woman. I can only understand to a certain degree why people are upset about these things. And some might argue that I can never understand. So the last thing people who are affected by these issues need is somebody like me coming along and telling them how they should feel, telling them how they should be reacting, and more importantly, how they're supposed to stay positive. I think the same kind of applies here. Like, you were just not equipped to have this conversation. And that's not a bad thing. It doesn't make him a jerk. It doesn't make him an asshole. Nothing like that. And that's not to say that men can't be part of this discussion that we've been trying to have. Like, but if you're going to get involved, you need to do so with some humility and with some indication that you at least tried to educate yourself on the subject at hand. Like, it would be like me going up to Stibbs and saying, hey, girl, I'm going to write about Popper. And Stibbs is like, do you play Popper? Do you know the metagame? Do you know the popular cards? No, my friend Alex Ullman plays Popper, and he tells me all about it. Says it's really fun. I think any editor worth their salt is going to be like, okay, you know what? Like, I think we're going to hold off on this until you, like, play some games and, like, you know your deck and you know your meta, because I just don't think you know enough about this yet. And nobody at Star City did that. Like, you know, let's not forget even the fact that they signed off on this article with an illustration of a black stick figure hanging from a noose with an excerpt from an episode of South Park dealing with race 2 days after a racially motivated terrorist attack that made international headlines. Like, who let this happen? Like, that's the question that just kept coming up to my mind. Like, who thought you were qualified to talk about this? Who thought this stick figure was a good idea? Like, who did this? Like, that's just what I kept coming back to. Like, it was an editing misfire. It was a PR misfire. It was just a fail on all fronts. And I was floored that this article swept through the cracks. Like, I just could not. I expected better from everybody involved. And that was just the overall feeling I had was, who let this happen?
Yeah, I think the most frustrating thing for me about the article was not the article itself, but when I read Cedric's apology and it said that several people had read this and no one found anything wrong with it. I think that was, and including the obvious, you know, stick figure lynching thing. I was kind of surprised about that.
Yeah, I mean, I know people that they have nothing to do with magic. Maybe they're into other dorky things and they read the Jim Davis article. They read Cedric's apology and they're like, yeah, how the hell did this get past like multiple people? I don't understand.
I don't understand how it's still being talked about. As of today, his apology has over 600 comments. What is there left to say? Like, what do you need to comment on? Like, what? That's what blows me away, is that it's still being discussed. Like, I can understand that we're still sort of cleaning up the mess from the article itself. That I understand. But, you know, what comments? I mean, I won't go in the comments because I learned my lesson after last week. But I just wonder, what's there left to talk about? Like, the man apologized. He did his thing. I don't see how that's still on the table for discussion. Like, I'm just amazed that we're still here. And I do worry that we're not out of the woods yet. Like, I do worry that there's going to be another article from another, you know, dude who didn't do his due diligence. And I just worry that we're going to be back here again. Like, I hope that there were some lessons learned from this. That's all.
Well, today I was looking at the Magic Origins preview card that Cedric reviewed for Days Undoing and talking about Quicken and some other things. And even in the comments, people are just still referencing the Jim Davis article, or they're like trolling Cedric to be like, I find this article offensive. Perhaps you should take it down. And I'm like, really, people? In comments for something this has nothing to do with? That is just fucking, I don't even know. Like, you wasted your time typing this? I don't know why.
Yeah, it's inappropriate.
Yeah.
I do hope that this kind of whole fiasco doesn't, what's the word? Doesn't, like, turn off other men from writing about this topic. Because I feel like I want to hear men's opinions on women in magic, because they are the large demographic. And I would like to know, you know, what their feelings are and what is going on. I just want it to be done a little bit more tactfully. So I hope that other men aren't discouraged by what came out of this, because I think we do need their voice as well as women's voices in the community about this subject.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think we can all take a lesson from Mark Rosewater, who wrote a really wonderful response to this on his Tumblr when he was asked to comment on the issue.
Oh man, we were at the PPTQ when we saw that, and I wanted to fall to my knees and just say yes, because it was perfect. And I couldn't help but laugh at the people who were so against this, they were even challenging Mark fucking Rosewater. Like, who do you think you are? Like, I was just blown away that there are people that would step to Morrow and say, Morrow, you're wrong. Like, girl, bye.
Yeah.
I want to point out that I mean, I went into the comments and I didn't comment, but I lurked for a little bit. And a lot of people were making the argument that magic is trying to target a, you know, their target demographic is males between the ages of like 15 and, you know, 35 or whatever it is. But I think that the demographic is changing, and I feel like people are not seeing that, because I think Wizards of the Coast is, you know, realizing that other people want to play this game and that that's not always easy to do. And so I think they're trying to include more representation, and they're trying to go about it in a way that's good, but people are not realizing that this change is happening. And I think you better get on the boat or you might fall off and drown. Like, that's just the way that magic is aiming right now, and demographics can change, and they are, and that's just the bottom line.
Speaking of that, I read something the other day. I can't find the article now, but I'm almost positive. Give me like 2 minutes. I can edit this out of the show. So there was something interesting I read the other day when we were coming home from the PPTQ. And it was an article that somebody from MTG Goldfish linked on Twitter. And it was an interview with Mark Purvis, I believe is his name. He is
brand manager.
Yes. And there's a video playing I didn't ask for. How do I make this go away? Okay. So it's an interview with Mark Purvis, and they ask him about the... God, this video is annoying. Okay. So they ask him about this... they ask him about the how big Magic is right now. And I think this is from February of this year. And they ask him, just how big is Magic the Gathering now? Purvis, there are 20 million fans. We've done a global study recently, and that's the number we're confident in. Fans is based on awareness. We ask if people have ever heard of Magic or if they've ever played Magic in the past 6 months. An astonishing statistic is that 38% who've answered yes are women, which is surprising to us as it shows a shifting landscape in the demographic of people who play Magic. What's concerning about this, if it's true, is, you know, we've wondered like what went into that number, and I'm a little concerned because we ask if people have ever heard of Magic or if they've ever played. So if 38% responded yes, that doesn't necessarily mean that they were playing. That they might have, some of those women might have just answered yes to whether they've heard of Magic. So yeah, we may not be even at 38% after all. Like, we may be in worse shape than we thought. And I was very concerned to see that.
Yeah, like, if you had asked me in, like, during Onslaught, if I had heard of Magic, I would have said yes, because I knew boys at school who played. I didn't play until M13, so that it makes a big difference.
Yeah, I actually had a woman the other day. I was at a meet and greet for work. We had like a happy hour shindig, and I happened to have my Community Cup jacket on, and she saw the logo and she approached me and she was like, hey, you know, my boyfriend plays that. And we had a conversation. And if you would have asked her the question, yeah, she's heard of Magic, but she's not actually playing. And this kind of turned my world upside down a little bit. So I'm kind of curious to see where we're really at or if there's going to be some clarification on that.
I saw somebody posted a thing estimating the numbers. I can't remember which event it was, but it was like barely over 2%, where the estimated number had been 5% of like how many females attended this event out of the like entire event's population or whatever. And it was a lot, like less than half of what somebody had projected.
I used to go through these standings at GPs and Opens, and I would try to determine how many, you know, players were women. And 2% was actually the standard. Like, not that that's okay, of course, but that was the typical percentage that I would see. I do remember that the GP, there was a GP in Florida that was limited, the one that Frank Lepore and Melissa both did really well in before she went to Wizards. I remember for some reason that one had 5%, and I couldn't really figure out, like, what led to the spike. But 2% is the standard, you know, given that... You know, of course, there's gender-neutral names, which could, you know, sway that in one direction. And if I couldn't find them on Facebook or Twitter, I would automatically default them to being male. But that seems to be the normal, and not counting side events, of course, and things like that. But 2% is kind of the standard, which is sad.
It would be interesting to get the numbers on GP Vegas, because at least, like, anecdotally, it seemed like there were a large percentage of women there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right, let's try to turn things around. We got a listener question today, which I thought was very lovely in light of the recent cloud we've all been living in. This is from Ashley Green. Ashley says, hi there. I'm writing you gals to let you know how awesome I think you are and how glad I am that your podcast exists. Oh, I literally happy dance every time my podcast feeder pings me, letting me know a new episode is downloading to my phone. Hearing competitive women produce content has done wonders for my self-esteem as a Magic player, because not only do you act as role models, but you are able to communicate your experiences as both a woman and a competitive Magic player. I decided to write to you in the wake of Megan's article and all the backlash that came from it. One of the most infuriating arguments that backlashing mansplainers, I love that word by the way, always make in situations like this is man up, make your own content, there is literally nothing stopping you. It is infuriating because while it is true that the only way more content is going to exist is if women make it, we all know that there is a lot stopping us. Well, I think my buttons have been pushed enough. I've decided that I'm going to start making content in the form of streaming. I think I am nice enough to be interesting, and even if I'm not, well, at least I tried. I'm a 30-something professional woman who started her Magic career in the girlfriend bracket in high school. Although being trans at the time, I guess it was the boyfriend bracket. Those are her words, not mine. I've only ever known Magic from a competitive perspective. The people I played with in high school and college were always testing, and only tier one decks were welcome at the kitchen table. It was fun, but not goofy, as we were trying to get better and queue for the Pro Tour. My question is this. I can sometimes be a little salty when I am losing. Girl. Me too. Not just losing a game here or there, but when I hit a streak of bad variants, I get kind of irritating for a little while until I pull away from the situation, and I worry about alienating a potential audience on my stream. Have you all talked about salt on your show and ways that you can combat this in the moment? I feel like I need a way to quickly move the salt out of my mind until it dissipates, so I thought I would ask you in this epic monstrosity of an email. Thanks again.
Well, first of all, go you for streaming. That's awesome.
Right?
I guess I could reiterate something that I said on one of our recent shows about streaming. I wouldn't say that I get super salty when I'm losing, but I do get a little down on myself. And when I'm on stream, I'm trying to keep like a punt counter and sort of like trying to make my losses almost part of the entertainment. Using them as learning experiences. So one thing I'm going to start doing is keeping a punt counter and having little pictures of like my dog's face or something, like whenever I punt or something. One of our listeners actually sent us a very disappointed beagle who I may use. She said that we have her permission to use her disappointed beagle if I want, and she looks really disappointed. She looks like she has she's being very judgmental. So, I would say just kind of like embrace it and make it sort of part of your routine, because as you can see from watching a lot of streams, like I've watched Kenji's stream, I've watched Chion's stream, you know, they kind of like, they make light of it in a way that's still entertaining, and like they don't like losing either, but they try to sort of, they acknowledge that it's going to happen. So that's my two cents.
I've watched other streamers that have been kind of salty on stream, but they do it in a funny way, and so that's okay with me. And I think if she did get salty for some reason, in some ways, it can come with just playing the game. It can come with, you know, how you feel in that moment. And I've never been a streamer. I don't know what that's like. But for myself in real life, it felt like the saltiest I ever was when I was actually doing well. And I'd be like, well, why am I starting to lose now? Like, why is this happening? And I would mostly beat myself up about it. And I guess I just had to, me personally, come to the conclusion that you can't be good all the time. You're not even as good as you probably even think you are. You're probably a decent player, but you might never play the Pro Tour. You might never do any of those things. But you're still a good person, even when you're not doing well at Magic. And sometimes the game does come down to variance. Another thing is, you can't blame yourself for that. You know, maybe you kept a bad hand, maybe other things happened, but you just gotta move on to the next game. That's the thing, there's always going to be a next one.
Yeah, for me, you know, as a recovering tilt monster, as I like to describe myself, the one thing that's really been helpful for me is reevaluating why I go to events. You know, I used to go to events by myself to compete, thinking that I had a chance. And maybe that's just defeatist thinking, but I'm not pro player girl. That's why I have Hallie on the show. Like, you know, Hallie's the one that I want. You know, she's going to end up on the Pro Tour. I just know it. She's going to end up doing well at a GP. I have faith in her.
Fingers crossed.
You know, but I know my role, and I'm very clear with sort of my place in this community. And, you know, again, it's not that I try to lose. It's not that I don't believe in myself or anything like that. But I just, you know, for a while there, I just didn't really see what I was bringing to the table. I just had a different view of myself. And, you know, since then I've come to realize that I started going to GPs for the experience. And, you know, I had the opportunity to go to GP Charlotte or GP Vegas. And I was like, I can go to Charlotte where I don't really know anybody. And if I don't do well, I have nobody to get me out of that funk. And I'm just going to stew in it and marinate in it, and nothing good is going to come from it. Or I can go to Vegas where there are dozens of listeners who want to meet me, and I can be with my girls, and I can be with our peers, and, you know, everything else is just sort of gravy. And I ended up having a really good time. Even when I was losing, I had so much fun losing, because what did I really have to be upset about? Like, I'm in Vegas! I'm with my friends, and we're going to parties every night. Like, I'm not a loser. Like, I'm not losing anything. And I think that's part of the reason why I was able to take that loss so well. And even at the PPTQ, you know, if Chris didn't go and Morgan didn't go, I probably wouldn't have gone. But, you know, when I look at tournaments as being social calls that just happen to have Magic games being played there, I feel like my attitude is so much better. I feel like I play better. And just sort of reevaluating myself and what I really get out of the game. And that even though I've lost, quote unquote, I'm not really losing anything. Like, I still have all of these great things to look forward to and to be happy about.
I also feel like identifying exactly what's making you upset is with one person. You hear people telling, like, bad beat stories, like, oh, he drew the perfect card or whatever. And yeah, sometimes that happens, but I think helping, like, for myself, it helps me to logically talk out exactly what went wrong and why that's upsetting me, which seems, I don't know, it's like an I statement almost, like you learn in kindergarten or whatever. But it's like, well, I made this play, this upset me because I didn't realize that this could happen, next time I can do this. And something like that can surprisingly really help with salt factor, especially if you have somebody to tell it to instead of just thinking about it. But, you know, after a game, if I make a bad play, yes, I'm upset. And then I go and I get with my group of friends and I'm like, well, I did this and I think I should have done this. But, you know, next time I'll know to look for this. And then usually after that, I'm just kind of over it. Like, that really helps me, just saying those few words, identifying exactly what it was in the game that made me upset, and then just being like, okay, I've been mad about it for this 5 minutes now. Now I can go on and play my next round.
Yeah, what I love about that, Katie, is that you don't dwell on it. Like, you sort of end your statement by saying, you know, next time I will do this, and you focus on the tournament ahead, the matches ahead, instead of what just happened.
Definitely. There's a lot to be learned from, even if you lose a match, in the rest of the matches, you know. I've heard stories of Reed Duke going 0-3 and playing out the rest of the 6 rounds or whatever, just because he wants to play Magic, and that's the way you get better, no matter what your record is.
Yeah. I think, you know, again, going back to, you know, reevaluating, you know, I think one of the hardest lessons I had to learn in terms of dealing with my own tilt was that a lot of the times when I was tilting, it was tilting because of things I did. And I never wanted to admit it. Like, I was wrapped in so much denial and in so much anger that a lot of the times it was because I made a mistake. And when I really looked back at the match, you know, and it was so painful, like peeling all those layers back, it was like, ow, crap, you're an idiot, crap, you're an asshole. There it is. And just being like, that's the card you shouldn't have played. That's the line you shouldn't have taken. And, you know, in the games where I really felt like I didn't do it, like when I really felt like I played my best and shit just happened and it was completely out of my control, you weren't going to win this anyways, I felt a lot better. But when I really looked at it, you know, I really compared all the times that I did tilt, the majority of the time it was shit that I did. I had just buried it so far deep and wrapped it in so much denial that I was really mad at myself, and I was just sort of taking it out on the other person. And that was a big moment for me. It was admitting that that was how I was dealing with things. And just learning to have like little victories too, where it was like, you know, just being able to say, yeah, I went 3-3, but I played Twin flawlessly. I really killed it this time, or I didn't forget a single trigger this time. You know, again, just finding reasons to redefine winning.
Yeah, or even in matches where you lose, like sometimes I'll be like, yes, I did this wrong, but I made this really good play here that I was really proud of, even though it was only one play and maybe my opponent didn't notice it, maybe nobody else noticed it, but I felt like I was on point for that 3 seconds of casting it or whatever. Sometimes those little victories can add up to be a lot more if you just identify them to yourself.
Absolutely. So, anything else on our minds before we go?
I'm headed to Washington, D.C. tomorrow.
Yay!
What's in D.C.?
My mom and my dad. We're just going for fun. My mom's there working, so she has a free hotel room for us to stay in. So we're just going to see the sights. I've actually never been to the East Coast, ever.
You're not missing a whole lot.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any Magic plan this weekend?
I am having a Modern Masters draft at my house, which should be fun.
Ooh. We were talking about that the other day in the car. Like, we were just like, I was saying, I need to live closer to Hallie because she has like pro tour viewing parties and like drafts. And I was like, that would just be, I would love to like have you be my neighbor and stuff.
You should come to Seattle. It's awesome here.
We'll be there for PAX, man.
Yeah. I did post on social media that the weekend of PAX Prime, I'm looking to host a draft. I know when people come to Las Vegas, Heather always hosts a ladies draft. And Heather is one of the most hospitable people I know, and I aspire to be as hospitable and welcoming as she is. So when people come to PAX Prime, I'm hoping that we can get a bunch of people together and have a ladies draft. I'm not sure what format it'll be yet, but I have a bunch of, I'm collecting a bunch of sealed products. So maybe we'll have a few options to choose from.
That would be so cool.
I'm thinking about taking the dive into Legacy for yes. Tacoma there in November.
you should do it.
Or what do you think you're playing?
Well, probably like Stoneforge, Mystic, or Miracles, obviously.
Yeah, I could see you playing Miracles.
Catherine Elise Neal.
Elise is okay.
That's my thing. I make up crazy middle names for people.
Yeah, I was also thinking about like Rug Delver or something like that. I mean, I've got Tarmogoyfs now, so I don't feel as, out of the ballpark as I used to. So I'm not sure. I'm just thinking about picking up a piece here too, and I have a few people who offered me decks that I could play if I do decide to go down to Tacoma in November. So thinking about it.
I'll
Awesome.
probably go, assuming that I like. I'm having a lot of fun with Dredge. Like, assuming that this keeps up, and I actually wouldn't mind if you played Miracles because I could use somebody to test against because I still haven't quite figured it out yet. But yeah, you should come that way. Because if I understand it correctly, you won't be able to come to PAX, but this way we could all get together for. Well, then Chris won't be there, but I guess that's. I don't want to say that's okay, but I mean, like, you'll get your time with us, you know?
Three quarters of the troops.
Yeah, you
Yeah.
know. So.
I already had someone ask me if I would be there so he could have me sign a card for him.
Did you see that somebody had replied to the Magic Twitter account, had sent out a tweet today saying, like, who are you looking forward to meeting? And one of our listeners named Addison said, I want the girls from the girlfriend bracket to sign my favorite card. And I'm like, oh.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I
so we need to
know.
make sure that we can
So
do that for
sweet.
him. Yeah, so. So if everybody's enjoyed listening to this episode, and if they want to know more about you, how can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter or Twitch at Halcansan. That's Halcansan. You can find me on here on Gathering Magic. You can read my articles. I haven't written lately, but I will be back soon, I promise. And you can send me an email at hcsmtg@gmail.com.
I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at KatieN_14 or by email katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. You can find me on Twitter at tchriz, tchkriz. My Gmail is yotchkriz. That's yotchkriz. And my Tumblr is also tchriz. I did post something today on Tumblr with some thoughts about women and magic. So have a read if you'd like.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That is OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistrux.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket, and you can email us your questions at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Special guest next week, Katie will be on vacation, and I think you guys are going to like who we have rounded up. So make sure you tune in next week. And thank you all for listening. Please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi.
Bye.